now. I come from a family, a maternal side of beautiful needle workers. And when I was a child, I recall back at about age 4 that my maternal great-grandmother, Mary Louise Wells, whose husband had expired from Civil War wounds, gave up her home, divided up her antique pieces with 3 daughters who lived within less than 2 blocks of each other. So what she did was she had her sewing box, and I think we would call it a weekend suitcase, and she would walk from one daughter's home to the next daughter's home once every 4 months. So she made her rounds, and she kept clothes in each one of their homes, and she kept her old laundry bags filled with odds and ends of pieces from not only the family, who would make what they called then house dresses or aprons or things for the church to give as projects for sales. Just anybody who would give her any odds and ends of leftover new materials. And she would sit in the chair. Now, the earliest recollection I have of her, as I say, was when I was 4, 5, 6, and 7. And by that time, she was in her late 70s. And I don't recall her death, but I'm sure somewhere around 79 or 80, she expired. Mm-hmm. So because I would stand by her and watch her mark and cut these little shapes of fabric and piece them together, I guess she decided that, well, here this grandchild who, to whom I gave her name, must be a future sewer or quilter. So she took a piece of fabric that was light in color, and she drew some lines on it with a pencil, threaded up a needle, and said to me, "Now here's the way you make stitches. Now see if you can't make them." And she kept working with me till finally I was able to do fairly nice size stitches straight on the line. And then she would give me a portion of a block of a quilt. She'd say, "Try to sew this together for me." Well, at the age of 7, I entered first grade. And I recall that I was wondering why I was in first grade almost the full year, but when I went into second grade, I was there like a month and a half, and I was being shifted down to another school to third grade. And I was only in third grade from like the end of October until January. And after we had had IQ tests, I was shifted to fourth grade. So I don't know, maybe God gifted me with a little better intelligence than some people. And so I finished the 12 years of elementary and secondary school in 9 years. So when I graduated in the Depression, I would love to have gone to art college, but our family had suffered reverses like many other families, and we were fortunate to have food on the table, which my grandfather, being a retired farmer, had come to town to live kept a good big garden and raised chickens. And we were never hungry. We might have had pancakes and milk gravy some nights for dinner, which were filling. And of course, the milk and whatever was enough nutrition for us. But there was no question of me being able to go away to an art college or school for teaching. Well, I took the classical prep course the first 2 years in high school, and I discussed with our counselor and the principal of the high school about what could I do, because I couldn't see any way of getting to college. And in those years, there were very, very few scholarships, especially from a very small town that was like the central seat of many small farm towns. So they suggested that since I seemed to be very good at drawing and with the sciences, that I think about nursing. Well, I always was very interested in people. I was raised with older people. My father died when I was about a two-month-old baby, and my mother and I lived with her parents, and she had two brothers and a younger sister there. So,
now were they, didn't they do any needlework too?
Well, my mother and my grandmother both were very excellent needleworkers. Right. But most of the quilts that were made during that period of time were made for utilitarian, not so much as to be in the category of like a Baltimore quilt that would be for fancy on a guest bed, because all the beds in our home were being in use by all of this, my grandmother's children, grown children, being at home. Finally, a couple of them married off. And when I was 8, my mother remarried. And my grandfather, on whose birthday I was born, said to my mother, "I've taken care of Grace this far, and I will take care of the remainder of the time. You cannot take her with you." And he had his reasons, because the man my mother married was a very nice man. He belonged to the Masonic organization. But he was about 12 years older than my mother. And he was a very pinch penny type of person. And my grandfather knew this. So he said to my mother, which I remember vividly one evening, from a discussion after dinner, "If Grace goes with you, she will never have anything. So I'm keeping her." But after my mother was married, I did see her every day, but I lived with my grandparents. So,
what kind of quilts were on the beds there? And what kinds of designs were the most common in your family?
Well, they made the designs that were the quickest to get together, such as nine patch or rail fence. The quilts now to me are rather vague, except for two that I gave to my other sons, and two I currently still have, and my husband uses one of them. But in those quilts there are they're both nine patch, but they contain, with color as strong as when the material was purchased for me for school dresses, and it's amazing how late 20s and the early 30s, I think these quilts were finished, how most of them have retained their color now. They were strictly scrap quilts, and they were portions of, men's shirts of men's tails, tails of men's shirts, seldom wore like sleeves or upper part of the shirt. So I know in these quilts there are portions of my uncle's and my grandfather's shirts. Plus my school dress fabrics.
What kinds of materials were those? What were the strongest materials?
Well, it was all 100% cotton, of course. Mm-hmm. And so, other than that, I don't recall anything fancy. When some of the members of the family moved out to their own homes, by that time, in the 30s, these heavily woven, beautiful, what we called counterpanes, that would have design in the weave, but they would be all white with a long, fairly wide throw that would cover over the pillows. Mm-hmm. My grandmother used those to dress up the beds that were empty. And unfortunately, when I was in my early 20s and she expired, well, no, she broke up her home because my grandfather expired. Whoever broke up her home because she did not want to go back into the house, she said she would be waiting for my grandfather to be coming in every evening at a certain hour, because he would work up. He worked up until the time he was 74 or 75.
What did he do?
Well, after he left the farm and came into town, he worked for a man who had a mill in the town, a dye mill, but he didn't work any of the dye tanks or anything like that. He did any number of general things for him. Mm-hmm. The man owned the park where baseball games and things like that were held, and my grandfather would be more or less the overseer of men who would be supposed to doing certain jobs. So anyway, he had a misfortune of stepping up a curb too quickly with his quick walk. He was very vigorous at the time he died, and he fell and struck his temple. And the doctor was treating for a kidney problem, which wasn't at all, and he died from the slow leak of the broken blood vessel forming a clot. And he went into a coma and died within 3 days. But he had such vigor that he could have probably lived till in his 90s. So anyway, my grandmother, after having been married for so many years, and it was a very good marriage, left it to others to break up her home. Mm-hmm. I helped some with my mother's younger sister, who was just 10 years older than myself. And she, of course, she was 10 years younger than my mother. So that we salvaged some things, but I don't know what happened to many, many things. So this is how it went until I graduated from high school with honors.
Right. Now, were you quilting and sewing all of this time?
All this time, I was doing all types of artwork, and I used to have to make all the staging props and things for school plays. I was into everything, music, chorus, and mm-hmm. all the athletic
sports. Back to the quilts, you were doing the quilting.
Well, I was not doing big quilts per mm-hmm. se, but as soon as I was married at the age of 24, after graduating from nursing school mm-hmm. and working at my home hospital, Cooper, in Camden, New Jersey, for almost 4 years as an assistant supervisor to the private and semi-private maternity and nurseries, I accepted a proposal of marriage from my present husband of 48 years. Mm. And for my new home, I decided I was going to make quilts for the beds and do all sorts of other needlework. And so then my husband was one of these persons, and still is, believes that the wife belongs in the home and let the husband be the head of the house and earn the money. And when children come along, the mother be there, because he lost his mother when he was 8 years of age. And he went through a series of housekeepers, aunts, and two stepmothers who didn't want him. They wanted to throw him into a military school, and he just decided that if we had children, he didn't want anybody but the mother taking care of them. But I did, after married 4 years, and then 4 years later, have my two sons. And when they were both in school all day, I became very, very active in all sorts of community activities as a volunteer, and was doing, at that time, plenty of needlework and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Because quilting, as with fashions, has its peaks and valleys of popularity. And at that time, I didn't need any quilts, and there were no groups around that were having quilting bees, so it sort of laid fallow for a while.
Hmm. What kinds of quilts, what patterns did you make for your sons in your home when you made those quilts?
Well, my grandmother had these scrap quilt tops, which no one had ever had quilted. So I used those with borders and got those together for the two children to have in their rooms. So when my sons were out of college, and I must say here that both of them have tremendous amount of talent. There must have been a great deal of talent in the genes, in particularly my family, because many of them were taxidermists, and many of them did fancy calligraphy writing and that sort of thing. And they appreciated things to make the home attractive, and they appreciated antiques. And I've always had a very deep interest in history, research of various types of history. So, of course, at age 55, my husband, who had a very fine, responsible job and was flying all over the world, really, and putting in 80 to 100 hours a week, just decided at 55 he had had the rat race. And we used to come to Florida almost every other year for vacation, then we'd go somewhere else the alternate years, generally around the country, taking our sons to all different national parks and trying to get them some on-location geography lessons. So he just up and quit his excellent job and said, "We're going to Florida."
What did your
19 years ago. Well, my husband has a degree from the University of West Virginia Electrical Engineering School. And while we were up north, he was 17 years during World War II as test engineer of all the large battleships and destroyers and aircraft carriers that were built at New York Shipbuilding Corporation. And he saw the handwriting on the wall that Mr. Wolfson was going to close that yard down. So he contacted a friend in Ohio who was on the atomic energy project. Now, most people thought that they were making the H-bomb out there. They were not. What they were doing was, as far back as the late 40s and early 50s, someone in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, laboratories that had to do with the nuclear people, felt that maybe there was something good in this heavy water, which is what flushes around the uranium cell. So what project my husband was in charge of, all the installation of the piping, what it was about was that they tested that heavy water in Oak Ridge, and from it we have had all these nuclear medicines. That's what came from the heavy water. Mm-hmm. Now,
so you moved down here 19 years ago. Now, did you start quilting more actively when you moved down here?
Not right off, no, because I had not done any nursing since 1940. And I said to my husband, look, I like Florida, but I don't particularly want to pull up at this period of our lives and go down there and live. I have all my lovely activities in Haddonfield, New Jersey, a beautiful little old historic town. And we have our friends, our family is in the area, and I don't feel like just pulling up stakes and going. He says, well, we're going. So we came. So I said to him, well, you have always said you don't want your wife working, but I'm very sorry. If I'm giving up all that I have here, when I go to Florida, I'm going to look into the nursing profession. So after we got moved in into Deerfield Beach, I saw this nice small-scale nursing home up Federal Highway in Boca Raton. And I walked in there one afternoon and I said, do you ever have any need for any nurses? And the man who was the administrator had me complete an application form, and he called my home school and checked out my grades, which fortunately were very high. And the next thing I know, he said, can you report for duty tomorrow morning at 20 minutes past 6? Well, I didn't have any uniforms, so I had to scurry around shop. And I went in there and I worked there for a while. And I also worked for about 2 or 3 years at Boulevard Manor.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't quilt during that time?
And I was doing mostly dressmaking and making clothing for children in the family, smocking, that type of thing. So I took a specialized course by the Heart Association for a coronary care unit. I only did it because I did not want to work at the age of 57 in a coronary care intensive unit. I wanted it to sharpen my skills for other patients I planned to have, because I had decided to leave the nursing home set up and go into private duty, which I did. And for all the rest of the years until I was 65, I did private duty in the general area of Palm Beach, Gulfstream, Delray Beach, and the hospitals in and around this area. And as a matter of fact, I got to almost what they call the burnout stage with nurses, because a patient would like me and I would like a patient. And they'd be 7, 8, 9 months, and they'd say, oh, well, will you do a double shift, and you won't have to come in until 9 o'clock, and you can leave at 10:30. I don't want any other nurse but you. So I would do this month on end, besides taking care of my home and my husband, grocery shop, and all the other things that go with being married. So I didn't have too much time left to do anything but something small that I could carry. And I am not a nurse. When I was active, I was not the type of nurse who would sit with a patient and be doing my work. I felt that I was there to give my full attention to the patient. So when I retired at 65, which I suddenly said to myself, how many more years do you think you have? And look at all the materials you have bought with the hope of getting more quilts, getting back into quilting. So I, as I say, retired, and someone told me about a group that had recently formed at the Boynton Beach Library, and they were down there quilting. So I walked in there one Thursday morning, and they're a very friendly group, and Connie Bache, who was instrumental in getting the group started, asked me to introduce myself and please tell them if I had had experience in quilting. And I said, as far as I can know, I'm the fourth generation maternally quilters. And so everybody had to go through a beginner's course, which I went through rather speedily. And when she saw what I could do, she said, well, I want you to take charge of the quilting, planning projects, and that sort of thing. Well, I ended up, after she had to move up to Central Florida, taking over the beginners, whom we brought in and gave a full course to get them so that they could work within a group on a common project.
Well, to you then, okay, fine, we can kind of, and I know what the quilting group does. Let me ask you this, what, to you, in your mind, what makes a good quilt? You were doing it off and on. What made a good quilt so that you could keep quilting?
To me, a good quilt is one that thought has been given to the purpose of where the quilt will be used, the color, and especially the color related to the design, and then is it pleasing to you, and do you think it will be pleasing to the person you're going to either do it for by donation or by commission? And then it's like anything else in life. You cannot play an instrument, not play an instrument well. You cannot make anything else well after putting in your time and energy and end up with a good project unless you know the good solid basics. So this is what I have tried to do in my teaching, which I did teach one adult education class.
And you do that in your quilting as well, the straight line?
I do that myself. And fortunately, because I had natural instinct for color and design and artwork of other forms, I'm ahead of the game more so than someone who may not be born with this, but who can learn it. if they're taught with the proper person and if they have the right attitude about to learn.
What's the, the attitude about wanting to learn? I thought there might be a quilter's attitude.
No, anyone, whether they want to do clothing for themselves or whether they want to make something from material in the house or even in doing needlepoint or pettipoint, any form of needlework or other types of work, you have to be willing to either determine for yourself how colors relate, or you have to have someone who knows to help you, because even in quilting, you can get fabric
and a color, or at least have somebody keep you in mind.
And also, you can have all these things thought out, but until you take paper and with color pencils or these rubber or felt tip markers, do at least 4 squares the size of the squares that you're going to make for a quilt, which these squares will all eventually put over. You have to envision what the overall large piece will look like when these smaller squares are all put together. You have to know that dark colors in certain places will come forward and change the whole design. And or against light colors, they may recede some. And if the lights are enough, if you have enough lights and fewer darks, then they will come to the fore and it will change the entire design, finished design. So you have all these things to think about. And you have to think about not having too many very tiny prints. Like if you have one color of print that looks like a real fine tracing over a pale beige or a white background, but the background is mostly covered and it's a very fine tracing repeated many, many times over the fabric, which is called vermiculite.
How do you spell that?
Vermiculate. Vermiculate. It sounds like the material that you use to start plants in. Vermiculite, but it's vermiculite. If you put a vermiculite design fabric with too many other very tiny designs, they'll all sort of run in each other and fade away. In other words, they'll be lost. That there has to be contrast, and you should have a light, a medium, and a dark. Now there is one very excellent quilt that you can make from scraps. It's called Love Ring, Love Vine, Friendship Ring, or Friendship Vine. You see, each design has many names, and that's because certain areas of the country many years ago have given a name to the same design that somebody in the East is making, which they've already named. But this love vine or love ring requires, and it can be made from scraps, it requires a light, a medium light, a medium dark, and a dark. And you put it together with 2 portions of a pattern called Drunkard's Path. And it's very effective as long as the size of your prints vary. But if you were to do them all in all very tiny prints, it wouldn't be very effective. You can also do that pattern in two colors, just two colors. But you can do it as a scrap quilt. They did that as a friendship quilt about 3 years ago, and it turned out to be beautiful. And it was varied colors, and the person that received it was very, very happy to get it. You see, at the library, the group makes once a year a friendship quilt. Now, everyone in the group doesn't always make a block. To be eligible to have your name put in a hat to be withdrawn when the quilt is finished, you must make a block. Mm-hmm. And you pay $3. And that helps to defray the cost of the materials if we buy new ones, and we always usually have to buy new material for the backing. Mm-hmm. They've decided to make them queen size. So therefore, the lucky person has a beautiful quilt for $3. But I made it in shades of light to medium to dark rose in prints for my granddaughter in Connecticut. And I used an old rose, a deeper old rose border, and I had a stencil which had a philodendron leaf type of a curly Q winding vine, but I felt that the leaf looked almost like an elongated heart. So since it's called Love Ring or Love Vine, I used that in the border, but she is not to get that quilt until year 2000. She's six now, because she has another lovely quilt, which every time I see it, I think, I wish I had kept that for myself, but I made it for her. It's called Children of Many Nations. And there are 24 children on there on a 12-inch block, the block background being off-white. And I research the costumes for the children or people of those countries. And I made the faces and the arms, legs, three-dimensional with a little stuffing, which is really trapunto type of quilting. And then I made their outfits to coincide with the traditional outfits of each country. And it was sashed with a pale lemon yellow with very little hearts and two little birds positioned in a certain way after so many hearts. And then for the inner border, which was 5 inches wide, I researched the flags of each one of those nations. And I separated them with a twining vine type thing with little leaves on it, and then of course the outside border was in the soft yellow. And it is a beautiful thing, but when and so much work into it, when I saw it this summer when I was up there, unfortunately her mother is a busy person teaching art in school, and she can't keep on top of the kitten, and the kitten is up laying on this quilt. And of course the Eskimo boy and the Siberian boy have this fake fur on for their costume, and I can just see that cat clawing into that. But each one of those blocks has a great deal of quilting that is designed strictly for that country. Like there's an igloo off to one side of the Eskimo boy, and he has a little string on a little piece of wood for fishing it with a fish on the end of it. Fishing, he had just caught it from an ice hole. All this sort of thing.
How long did it take you to make that quilt?
Well, I worked 18 hours a day on that quilt, besides doing the work at the library. I really should not have done it, but it was 18 hours for 3 months.
Whew, a day.
And
so
I ended,
week?
Yes. And I ended up with a right hand that I could hardly move, and I didn't quilt for quite, you know, a few weeks after that.
Let me ask you this, and then probably just sort of close.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. What do you like about quilting?
Well, it satisfies my interest in sewing, which I have done since I was 3 and 4 years old. It satisfies my creative thinking and working with color. It satisfies my interest in history for such things as the Space the Universe quilt, which I did for my son. I spent almost a year researching astronomy and all the books in the library concerning the firmament. And it's something that you can pick up and do for a while, do for a long time. And when you're finished, if with good care, you're leaving an heirloom. You're leaving something that's going to last a long time. I used to play bridge when my husband was on the job in Ohio, and for a couple years thereafter. And I'm not a person that likes to rehash and rehash. And I found that in bridge, once the game is over and played, it's over. Sure, it's good to improve your technique, but the constant rehash, and when you're finished putting in your time, what's there afterward? So that's why any type of needlework, and of course with the history of quilting being in the maternal side of my family, it's very gratifying to me to do it. And right now, 3 years ago, my husband and I went out to a Hawaii. And I had learned about the famous Hawaiian quilter in Honolulu by the name of Keopola Kakalia. She goes as Deborah or Debbie. I learned of her through Ruth Iceta, who is a beautiful quilter down in Delray. And once I saw the Hawaiian quilting, I said to myself, I just have to try this. And it's more involved, really, than some quilts of either traditional or contemporary, because there's more quilting on it and there's much more appliqué on it. And just the challenge of taking 5 yards of fabric, folding it in half, then in quarters, then in eighths, and putting this huge pattern with a straight side and a bias side and laying it correctly on that folded 5 yards and cutting it out and carefully laying it down on a background piece of 5 yards so that you don't stretch the bias edges, and you have this one huge piece opened up laying on top of the other piece of fabric. To me, it's fascinating. Hmm. And if you recall in school when you would be given a piece of paper and told to fold it and make snowflakes, well, just imagine that in a 5-yard piece. That's a real challenge. So I have 2 in the works, and I have 1 to cut, which is going to be for me. Would you believe it, with all this quilting that I have helped other people with, and the amount of volunteer time I've given to Boynton Beach Library, I don't really have a new quilt or a recent quilt for myself. Mm-hmm. With my birthday in November, I purchased from Debbie a pattern that is a Fuji Mum. And I'm going to do that, hopefully, God willing, a quilt for myself. Great. It will be a bedspread size, because if you do a twin size quilt in Hawaiian, you want to get about half of the pattern.
Huh. Okay.
So this quilt will be like a bedspread, it'll go down to the floor.